Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents...
He's in the building!
Afternoon Tea with host Sammy Sage.
Is that what you're saying?
Please proceed, Governor.
Presented by the Betches Sup Podcast.
You better hope there's a lot of girls listening to this with the volume turned down.
Your weekly dose of political therapy.
Cardi, that's what I've been doing my whole life.
And now, with this week's guest...
Well, there were three of us in this marriage, so it was a bit crowded.
Your host, Sammy Sage.
Welcome to today's episode of Afternoon Tea, your companion to the morning announcements and weekly political therapy session brought to you by The Betches Sup. Today's guest is Em Schultz, co-creator and co-host of the award-winning comedy podcast And That's Why We Drink, about true crime and the paranormal. Em is here to tell us about their experience and connection to the paranormal and how they came to host a hit podcast about it, as well as clearing up some misconceptions about the process of coming to understand one's own gender identity. With that, let's get the tea from Em. Welcome, Em. It is so great to be speaking to you. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I've recently left quarantine for the first time, and so I'm trying to relearn how to socialize. So I'm going to take this as a social test.
We can practice because I'm also working on the same.
We're all rusty. It's okay.
Yeah. So first of all, happy Pride. We're recording a little before Pride, but this is coming out during Pride.
Well, happy Pride to you. Do you fall under the rainbow mafia anywhere?
No, but you could call me an ally. I hope I don't want to label myself as an ally, but I hope to be able to be an ally. Yeah.
You're just a good pal. I see.
Yeah, just a good pal. But yeah, so because it is Pride Month, I've been trying to ask all of our interviewees, what was your favorite Pride that you've celebrated? Like either which year or which like moment, something just what's your best?
You know, so my first Pride I went to was in LA, and it was okay, but big crowds scare me. And so I've actually realized that my favorite Pride moments are kind of when I've clocked other queers in public and we've become friends by accident. I've also felt very safe. My favorite Pride moments are, my favorite consistent Pride moment is every Thursday before COVID, I would go to drag bingo. And so it always felt nice to be in those little spaces where I wasn't alone and I was not the minority. So I've always felt, you know, really touched by those spaces. But Pride itself, it wasn't my thing. So I embrace the tinier little moments.
I hear you totally. So I also have a fear of crowds. What's your fear of crowds?
My fear of crowds, I actually didn't, I don't know if it's a claustrophobia or it's once I moved to the city. And so I'm just more aware of how inconvenient it is to even get to the crowd. And then I have a horrible time, like just the traffic and all the logistics of it annoy me, but also like not to make this a dark thing, but you know, it with so many, with gun rights being something that we need to address as a country, I get very terrified in big spaces, especially, I'm lucky in LA, but I actually am from Virginia, and I always got nervous when I was in, if I tried to go to like a queer meetup or something there, and I just never knew how things would go. So
yeah,
not to make it totally dark,
but we are going to get into some dark places. Perfect. With your podcast, but no, I'm totally with you on the crowd thing, similar reasons. But the reason I asked is because I read in the Pop Culturalist that you are a Grateful Dead fan. Which I am a Grateful Dead fan.
And do you have a favorite song?
Jack Straw is my favorite song. What about you?
I like Uncle John's Band.
Love
and,
that.
I'll leave it there. Otherwise, I'm going to tangent. So I'll say Uncle John's Band.
You can feel free to tangent. But so, yeah, no, I definitely struggle with the crowds in those scenarios, but you know, I'll stick to my Spotify playlist maybe.
Well, fair enough. And when I was younger, I was raised by Deadheads is why.
Me too.
That's why I got into it. I don't think there's another way to be infiltrated into or inducted into that space.
Right. It's a hereditary thing.
Yeah. It's just like kind of like trauma at this point.
Yeah.
So I actually used to love crowds as a kid because I was a big like Warp Tour person and, you know, big live festivals like that. But also, again, I think that came from the lack of empathy towards my parents in terms of convenience. I didn't care that they had to drive me 2 hours and then sit in the car while I had a good time. And then all of a sudden I had to drive myself places where there were crowds. And I was like, I'm already not feeling this, especially when, the roles reversed, the tables turned, because after all the years of my mom driving me to music festivals when I was a kid, she recently went to Coachella and I wasn't invited, but wow. I had to drive her. And I live in LA. Palm Springs is 3 hours from me on a good day. And so she came to visit me in LA and then I had to drive her 3 hours to Palm Desert and then sit in the hotel while she had a good time at Coachella.
And she was so funny.
This is just for everything you've ever done to me. So
your mom is cool. She goes to Coachella.
She was the first person to break in the medic tent at Coachella. She partook in a little too much, if you catch my drift.
So. Oh.
So she's a little too cool, I think.
So she knows how to have a good time.
She knows how to. She grew up in New York in the 80s during like the real party scene, and she was social. Let's just put it that way.
She's social.
She knew people.
Yeah. That's perfect. So, okay, yeah. We're going to go back to the dark a little bit.
Oh, great. We were having too much fun up here. We'll get back there.
Don't worry. We'll get back there. We're going on a journey. So, you host a podcast about true crime and the paranormal. And.
I do.
That is obviously, I mean, definitely a very specific interest. Mm-hmm. I mean, though many people share it, and I would include myself in that. So where did you get that? Like, where did your passion for that come from?
Whew. Well, so I cover the paranormal side. My co-host is more fascinated by true crime than I am. And so one of the magical parts of our show is that we teach each other our own passions. So I would say I really only have ever had a true interest in the paranormal before the podcast got kicking. And it started when I was seven. You usually give that answer. Seven is the first paranormal experience I remember in detail having. I had other experiences before that, but when I was seven, it was the first time I saw a ghost. And it was my grandfather.
What did it look like?
It was my grandfather. So it looked a lot like him. He had passed a week before, and he, I guess, was kind of making his rounds through the family to say goodbye to everybody. I give him an A for creativity because every person had a different experience. So someone saw him in pictures, another person saw him in their dreams, another person, he like left a little trinket in a closet where it shouldn't have been. I was the lucky one who got to see him in real time. And
did he look ghost-like, like the way that they would in a movie?
Solid. He looked solid. He looked okay. like he was like grandpa was just in town.
Okay.
But I give the caveat that so he came to visit me when I was sleeping, and the room was dark. So I really just got his silhouette and maybe like the light kind of hitting him where I knew enough that it was him, but I didn't get a really good look. And plus I was very tired because he woke me up from my sleep and I was seven. So
ghosts will do that.
Ghosts will do that. Well, I like to think that because I was younger, I was more
open.
I don't know, open to seeing him, or if it were anyone else who were older and had been taught like what's real and what's not, maybe it wouldn't have been as easy for him to access them the way that he could with me. So I remember him sitting on the bed. And I woke up and he was just sitting there and smiling. And some people might think, oh, a man sitting on your bed smiling at you is pretty creepy. But there was something, I'm a big believer that spirits are really good at manipulating the energy or the environment around you to make you feel however they want you to. And I definitely felt completely at peace. Didn't even bat an eye. I was like, oh, there's my dead grandpa. And I didn't even think about it. And the next morning when I woke up, even my mom says I was really weird. I was saying words that I didn't know yet. I was just kind of acting odd. But after that day, I always told her I wanted to grow up and be a ghost hunter. So,
wow.
It worked out a little bit. I get to at least talk about ghosts, so.
So do you ever encounter people who, I mean, I'm sure you must, like, who dismiss the paranormal, the existence of ghosts? Like, how do you react to such dismissals?
My own girlfriend. Are you kidding me? My own girlfriend.
Okay. Okay. What's that like?
Which, it's not great, to be honest. Especially because one of my, like, I was one of those people, like, wrote a list of what I want in a partner. And at the top was, like, a big believer in the spooky stuff. And then she walked in and I was like, well, I guess this list is not going to get 100% accuracy.
Right.
She is not completely closed off to it, but she tries to think very critically of, like, well, what could that have been, versus me, who I'm, like, ready to, like,
it was ghost.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. Are you not kidding? Are you kidding? That was Casper, 1,000%. Right. It's okay, but I feel like I can only tell her so much while keeping her interest before I've just, like, completely derailed. And she's like, okay, well, now we're, like, in fantasy land. So I have the perk of having a lot of friends who are interested in this kind of stuff, my co-hosts included. And so I usually run to them for the more fantastical part of the storytelling.
How did you actually meet your co-host and decide to do this podcast?
We knew each other in grad school, but it took us a year and a half to become friends. Not that we were enemies at first or anything like that. Although that would be
I was going to ask. Cool, I was like, okay, so were they enemies first or was it just like a casual acquaintance thing?
It would be a wonderful origin story to have started like at the complete bottom of friendship and just worked our way up into liking each other. But it's interesting. So we went to the grad school in Boston for TV, for television. And there was only 15 of us. So we saw each other all the time, but those 15 people kind of built like three different circles of friends. And we just didn't ever run into each other, which is also funny because we lived right across the street from each other, like door to door. If I was looking across the street, it was her apartment from my apartment. And it's one of those funny hindsight moments of like, wow, the universe really kept throwing us into each other's way.
It's like, need to meet each other.
Yes, I used to follow her to school because I didn't know how to get to our campus the first couple weeks. And so I would wait until the girl with glasses would leave the building and I knew she was in my class, so I just follow her. So I mean, like, there were That's so many hilarious. Times where we overlapped and it just never happened. But when we got out here to LA, all of our friends that we made in Boston ended up moving back home and we were alone. And so out of complete necessity and desperation for friendship, I reached out to her and I was like, do you want to hang out? I guess we're like, you're all I know. So,
yeah.
And I invited
the glasses who I used to follow rather than exactly. Check out Google Maps.
Yeah. One would think GPS was available to me, but I really ran with the right. Just being as creepy as possible. But so I asked her, it happened to be fall and I was like, oh, there's like this harvest festival thing happening. Would you want to go with me? And it was like an hour away. So there was a good hour of awkward small talk on the way there.
Oh, wow.
It hadn't even begun
I
yet.
I would have checked out just based on that alone. Like I never would have gone somewhere an hour away with.
I don't know why I chose that or offered it to her or why she said yes, but I think we both realized that there's nobody else we know for on this entire side of the country. So we just kind of have to white knuckle it.
And the comfort level from like, you see someone a lot. Uh-huh. There's like an innate comfort.
There's a proximity effect somewhere, I think. But we ended up actually having a really good time. And, you know, the conversation stayed pretty consistent. But when we got to the Harvest Festival, we ended up on a tractor ride, aka we were stuck sitting next to each other with nothing else to do but talk. And that was when our friendship really thrived, because we started talking about kind of spooky things and followed each other on Twitter. And I realized she was funny. She realized I was probably a little also funny. And she asked me if I listened to any podcasts. And I said, what's a podcast?
Oh, wow.
And which, again, the universe was just probably laughing at us. But she introduced me to some of her, the podcast she listened to, which were all spooky themed. And within, by the end of that day, I would say we knew that there was a solid friendship there, and we started hanging out all the time, and we bonded over these podcasts she recommended, because she'd be like, oh, have you caught up on this one yet? And so our friendship really started early, talking about spooky adjacent podcasts. And within a couple months of it becoming the norm to see each other all the time, I was like, let's just, we already talk about this stuff anyway, let's just put a microphone in front of our faces and see what happens. So.
I love that. Not just because, you know, you became hosts, but because I feel like it's hard for people to make friends, especially when they're in a new place. And to hear that you pushed past the awkward hour in the car on the way. And like when, you know, a real friendship can come out of an uncomfortable pairing.
It's a very uncomfortable pairing. And also what I also think was one of the real significant selling points of our show is that we didn't know each other. We knew each other for 2 months or so, and just we're still kind of in that small talk phase of we like being around each other, and this, you know, it's nice to be in company, whether or not I really know the person. But when we decided to start a podcast, one of the magical parts of it, I think, that a lot of listeners enjoyed was they got to watch us become friends. So from the very beginning, basically any conversation we had, we would wait until we had a microphone in front of us. I would show up at our house, then we would turn on the equipment, and then we would start talking. So almost every conversation we had for the first year of our friendship is documented for people to listen in on and learn all of the weird quirks about each other. And they get to watch us, you know, fall in platonic love with each other.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I try to save some commentary for recording. I'll admit to that.
It's nice. Yeah. It's nice to know that you've got it. Like a log somewhere.
Yeah, it's like I haven't spoken for 2 hours. So what is your what's your like favorite paranormal thing to talk about, to think about?
Well, I don't know if this is the answer you're looking for, but one of my favorite topics is Zach Bagans of Famed Ghost Adventures, because he is a very over-the-top ghost rock star. And a lot of times when I'm doing my own research, I end up watching Ghost Adventures to give more information on the story. And Zach Bagans has become quite a main character of our show, just because we bring him up almost every other episode. And we have a little history with him, because apparently he's blocked my co-host on Twitter a few times. So, and we don't even know why, but, so we play it off on the show that we just have like this like mortal rivalry with him. In terms of paranormal topics, I really like talking about the haunted dolls, that we've covered. There's two in particular that we don't even say the names of, because apparently they're so haunted that to mention them is a health concern. They're the only two episodes I've ever done that came with content warnings, because I had to say the name at least for a second for people to know what we were talking about. And we got all these emails of people getting in car accidents listening to the episode, having like migraines, having nosebleeds.
Wait, don't say the name.
No. I won't, because anytime we've even kind of joked about it after the fact, our audio got like messed up later and we lost files. So I'm not going to do that to you.
Oh my gosh. Okay. We got to get away from this. I'm like, what are we even talking about the people? Okay. So it is, I will admit, it is pretty interesting that, you know, you had this experience when you were younger. You say to your mom, you want to be a ghost hunter, and now you sort of, through this person you had known on the periphery, now this is actually your job in a way. You know, you're not quite a ghost hunter, but, you know, a ghost hunting podcast is very close. So yeah, that is really amazing. I was going to ask you if you had known what you wanted to do and what you were younger, because, you know, obviously for Pride Month, I wanted to talk to you about gender identity and the role that gender has played in sort of your self-discovery. Sure. So yeah, that's kind of like, how did that kind of contribute to where you are now?
Ooh, you know, I will say that also, this is my, I like to give this disclaimer also, because a lot of people like to decide for me how I identify. And I've never actually publicly come out as anything yet. So that's part of, it's actually part of my answer to your question, is that I think one of the part of my journey so far has also been kind of a blessing for the podcast, because apparently I'm not the only person who's incredibly confused. And that has helped a lot of people. We've had listeners reach out either online or whenever we've done tours. There's always at least one or two people at the meet and greets who will say, like, thank you for, you know, letting me know that it's okay to just not know what the fuck is going on. And I've also had parents of queer people say that I'm the reason that they're able to, you know, walk through this with their kids. So I think that in that way, my self-discovery or my lack thereof so far has definitely helped the show, because there's so many, a huge demographic of our show are queer people. And so I think it's kind of an interesting view. Usually when you see people you, quote, look up to, or at least insert in your life, whether it's podcasts or TV or whatever, they already have a label set in stone, but it's very rare you find somebody who is openly confused and openly questioning. And so I'm very proud of getting to be that for people.
Right. That is so true. And I think it is so important, because it shows people that, like, it's okay if you're in, if you don't know, or you don't have, you know, you aren't sure what your pronouns are. You aren't sure what you want them. You know, maybe you know, or there's a space between figuring it out for yourself and then, you know, obviously putting it out there in the world. So how did you, I guess, come to discover that you were confused?
How did the insanity begin? So I came out, well, I always knew I only liked women. That was never in question. That actually makes my gender experience even more confusing, because I, on the sexuality end of it, I am so affirmed and so in agreement with myself. So the reason that I question my gender so often is because I'm like, well, if this was so clear cut for me, why isn't this so clear cut? So like, that makes me think like there's some sort of gray space I'm living in, like what's going on? But I always knew since I was at least three or four, that's my earliest memory of having a crush on a girl. I came out officially when I graduated high school. I told myself as a kid, I'll come out when I leave for college. That was always the plan, because I wanted to do it before college, because if I brought home a girlfriend, I had heard the phrase forever, like, oh, it's just a phase, which like in the 90s and early 2000s, that was like all parents could fucking say about it. Totally. And so they were like, oh, it's just a phase. I knew when I left for college, or if I, you know, wherever I ended up after high school, when I brought a girl home, I didn't want anyone ever thinking it was a phase. I wanted to like stop it in advance and be like, no, this is what you can expect from now on.
Right. Pretty smart way of thinking about it. Yeah.
I had many years to ponder. So, but I had the plan in motion, or at least I knew that that would be the plan, but I came up with that plan when I was in like middle school. So I had a lot of years to avoid having to think about it. And then I turned 18, or I was turning 18 right in the same week that I was graduating high school. And I was like, oh shit, I haven't told anyone. I need to get on that. Like I need to.
Oh, you're like my deadline.
Yeah. I was like, wow, I've been really procrastinating on this. And now like I have to do it this week, like no pressure. And so I ended up telling everybody, and I was really lucky that everyone in my main circle had no problem with it, which I did not expect. And so when I came out as gay, I always knew even then that the word lesbian felt wrong. Because I think it was just really feminizing, or anytime I ever heard someone refer to me as miss or as a woman or she or whatever it is, I just knew that that gendered language was made me really uncomfortable. And so I always just kind of said gay as a universally understood phrase. It also felt kind of more gender neutral. And I don't think so part of being gay or, you know, queer at all, 20 years ago and in the South, I was a really late bloomer in terms of dating and physical activity with someone I was interested in, because you just didn't tell anyone you did that. So there was no way of finding out if other people around you were like also into that. Right. So I didn't actually get to be with anybody until college. And that was when I realized that there was something, quote, wrong or off about my gender, because it was the first time another person was coming at me and like trying to like, you know, grab on me, and no one had ever done that before, so I never had to think about it. I just thought like, oh, I'm just gay, and that's all, that's where my worries end. And I also used to, you know, just try to ignore thinking about my body, but in my mind, the way I had justified it, I guess, because trans wasn't a word then, gender wasn't a concept. So for me, I was just so gay, I wanted to be a guy, or I wanted to come across as masculine. And in my head, I just justified it as, oh, I'm just really fucking gay. Like, I'm just so beyond, like, holy crap gay. And I think it was also because as a kid, I knew that boys are supposed to like girls. And so in my head, I was like, oh, that's why I want to be a boy, or why I think of myself as more masculine, because they get to be with girls. And so I thought it that way at 6 years old, and then just never thought about it again. But when I started meeting trans people in college and realized that gender was something to think about, and also now girls are trying to do stuff with me and I have to address my issues with my body, that was when I realized something else was going on, and I still haven't totally figured it out.
I mean, it's really amazing how far you've come just at this point. But yeah, I mean, I think that's really awesome. So you grew up in the South, and you said no one, like, quote, had a problem with you coming out. But
right.
There's, I think, a big gap between, like, having no problem and having, like, real genuine support. Did you feel that you had that, like, either from your family or, like, close friends?
Shockingly. So, yes, there's a huge difference between tolerating and totally accepting and condoning and supporting and all this. And when I came out as gay, I came out in 2009, 2010. The first time I really came out to someone was in 2006. And I came out when I was 14. I came out to one person at 15. So 2006 to 2010 was when all my coming outs happened, the first round at least. And I think back then, I think it was like cool to have a gay friend. I think that was like the new rage. Like, everyone knew someone who was gay. And so I didn't feel any homophobia in that way. There were like little microaggressions because we were all learning, but I didn't feel any animosity from somebody. I think everyone was like, oh, finally, I've got one, you know? And so in terms of like having a gay friend.
It's hard to get one in the South. So.
It is. And so
that's their own fault.
And so I felt very embraced and very welcomed by the people who mattered. I had a really lucky coming out experience. I was really stressed about it for years, but when it happened, I had a really wonderful experience, which is kind of what made coming out a second time really wild for me because I just assumed, hey, everyone was really cool with it the first time. Like, I have no reason to think there's an issue. And like, now the cool thing is to like have a trans friend. So like, we all know, like, so like, maybe I'll just like hit that mark again.
You're like, I'm here, guys.
Yeah. It's like, remember when I made you look cool 10 years ago? Well, I'm back at it.
Yeah.
And so I tricked myself into thinking that people would be just as accepting. And I actually got a lot of pushback from a handful of people that were totally fine with me being gay, but I guess gender was too new of a concept for them to wrap their head around. Or, and so that it was really hard, not only getting pushback from people that I love, but feeling tricked or betrayed because they were so wonderful the first time and would have fought to the death to defend me. It's like, why can't they do it now? And it's just another wonderful moment, a PSA for people that transphobia does exist in welcoming circles, just in case people were wondering. So yeah. So that's been a constant struggle since I started coming out to people. When was that? 5 years ago now? And it's still something I have to deal with. There are still some people who can't come to terms with it. So
I'm very sorry about that. That is like, that's very challenging.
But, sure is.
Yeah, but I mean, you really have a lot to be proud of.
Thank you.
And I'm wondering if you have ever taken stock of what you are kind of most proud of yourself for accomplishing.
No, I haven't. That's a great question. I definitely don't take time to think about what I've accomplished. I don't know. I usually think of the... I should. You're right. I definitely think of like, I don't think of it as a general, oh, look where I am today from, you know, since childhood. But usually the only time I ever look at what I've accomplished is when I'm comparing it to a time where I wasn't in the best place. So like in college, I had a really nasty relationship and so I'll look at myself today based on that. But it has to be, there has to be some sort of negative memory for me to reflect on in order to even think about where I am. So,
okay, that makes sense.
Wow. Held a mirror up to me. I really should just be more proud of myself.
I want to know what you're excited about for yourself. But if you could talk to, you know, your younger self, what would you have told your younger self? I know I'm getting like real philosophical here.
No, it's one of those questions where I should have an answer like at the ready and I just never do. Like there are some, how many words do I get? Like
as many as you want.
Oh my goodness.
You're like, I wanted fewer.
No, I just, there's so many categories of my life I'd like to like warn them about. Like, you're not just gay. I wish I went on like MySpace and found Christine, my co-host, years earlier so we could have started the podcast before podcasts were a thing and like really hit that like high mark. I would have warned myself on just some of those stupider decisions I made. I was a reckless teenager. I was reckless in an interesting way because I didn't drink and I didn't do drugs, but I was definitely friends with the whole party scene and I ended up in some weirder situations. So I would have warned myself of things like that. But in terms of like a philosophical, here's my moral that I'll die on this hill, I don't think I have one. I think I would have just said like, really appreciate all of these fun memories. Like every fun memory you're having, take a moment to try to remember the sounds, the smells, what's happening to you, and just embrace this moment because it might not happen again.
I think that's really good advice. So you do have the philosophical answer.
Thank you. Well, usually when I suffer also with a lot of like depression and anxiety. And one of my big triggers is nostalgia because I didn't appreciate it enough as a kid. So there are certain things where I'll look at a picture and I like completely transport myself back to that time. And I just think, wow, I can't believe I had no idea that was like one of those memories I'll probably like flash back to when I see my life flashing before my eyes. So.
Yeah.
I would say embrace all your little happy moments.
That's really important. Well, thank you so much, Em. I've loved speaking to you, getting to know you. This has been a really, really awesome conversation. And
thank you. I'm sorry. I feel like I was such a chatterbox. I feel like I didn't even get to know about you.
No, we're here to learn about you. I mean, this is really all about you. But where can everyone find your podcast? Where can they follow you? Anything you want to throw out there?
I am on, and that's, well, the podcast is And That's Why We Drink, and our socials are ATWWD Podcast. My personal socials are VM Schultz, and that's about it. You should follow me on Instagram, shameless plug, because I do a lot of fun weekly content on there. So if you like gossip, I host something called Tea Time Tuesdays. I do $5 giveaways every Friday if you drink my favorite tea from Starbucks. So just like random things like that. But if you'd be interested, you can go find me at VM Schultz.
At VM Schultz. Check it out. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much, Em. This has been it was really so wonderful to talk to you. And
oh, thank you.
Yeah, and happy Pride.
Afternoon Tea is produced by Sean Kilby and Jorge Morales Pico. Our editor is Stacey Wong. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Guest booking by Nicole Pellegrino. Be sure to follow at Betches_sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com. Betches.